Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and it's a pleasure to introduce my friend Sal Mannan to VI Talk. Hi Sal.
Hi.
And you're here as part of our eye condition series, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so Sal's got an eye condition that we haven't covered yet or talked about, and it's quite interesting because it's quite rare, I think. But obviously Sal will tell us more about that. So Sal, do you want to tell us first what your condition is?
Okay, so I was born with a condition called congenital rubella syndrome, which is the cause of my vision impairment. So congenital rubella syndrome is an umbrella of multiple disabilities and defects caused by the Ruby virus, known as rubella or German measles. It can be quite one of these conditions that it affects children before they're born. So in vitro, so when you're in the uterus, that's when the condition can, when rubella can be quite dangerous and can have consequences. And it's more the consequences are more severe in the first and second trimester of pregnancy. So when doctors often say, you might hear them say that, oh, rubella is very dangerous for a pregnant woman, it's not the mother that they're actually trying to protect, it's the unborn child. And what rubella will do is it can cause the two main visual impairments that rubella can cause is congenital cataracts and glaucoma, and sometimes it does cause blindness. So a visual impairment is just one of many disabilities and defects that rubella can actually cause. And as you say, rubella syndrome is quite rare. It's quite rare now than what it was. I mean, it was classed as an epidemic in the 60s to the 70s. Since the MMR vaccination in the 90s, it was eradicated in the UK and the US. So it is quite rare in countries like the US and UK where vaccination is available, but it's more prevalent in countries where the vaccination isn't actually available.
Yeah, okay. So what condition have you got due to the rubella syndrome?
So for me, what it looks like in me is that I have I was born with congenital cataracts, and I then had the lens removed after birth, so I'm aphakic. I have aphakia, which means that there's no lens in the eyes. I also have, from the rubella, I've also have eccentrically shaped microcornea. So the corneas are smaller than average size, and I also have very small and narrow ectopic pupils, which are off center and sit almost towards the top of the iris. And I also, with it, alongside it, is I have nystagmus, strabismus, which they class as a convergent squint, and a bit of a lazy eye. So my left eye is quite recessive and it's lazy, and it also causes photophobia as well. So yeah, so it's quite for me, it's quite a bit of a list of all these different kind of conditions, because it just the eye didn't develop properly due to the rubella. So but luckily for me, I have it quite mild compared to other people, because I still have a fair amount of sight, so I can still see print, but I need it enlarged and things like that. So yeah, so for me it's not too bad. I think I have it quite mildly compared to others, I think.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So it's quite a few different conditions, isn't it, that you've got, really. So how did your parents know as soon as you were born that, or before you were born, that there might be a problem, and how did that kind of how did they realize that you had a sight condition?
So when I was actually born, they didn't actually know that I was born, you know, with a vision impairment. They didn't actually know that the cataracts was there. They had no idea, because what happened with me was that they were concentrating so much, because the rubella also caused a heart condition for me. So I was born with an ASD, atrial septal defect, which is a hole in the heart, and so because of that hole, I wasn't breathing or feeding by myself, so I was incubated, and they were concentrating, and you know that they were literally told that I wouldn't live, I wouldn't survive. So they said that, oh, you know, the baby might not, you know, don't. They were saying things like, you know, don't have too much hopes. The baby might not live. The baby is probably not going to survive. So basically, what they were doing after I was born, for the first 3 months of my life, they were trying to keep me alive. They were trying to, you know, making sure that I survived. They were concentrating on that. So then it was when they sent me home at 3 months old, my granddad realized that I wasn't opening my eyes. So he was thinking, why is this baby, you know, because at 3 months old, babies are supposed to open their eyes. They're more alert at that age. Mm. And he's thinking, well, this baby doesn't open her eyes. Why, you know, what's going on here? What, she's not opened it. She, you know, she cries and, you know, all that. But she's never, you know, they've never seen my eyes. So he took me back. They took me back to the hospital, and they said to the doctors and said, oh, well, you know, the baby, there's something wrong with the baby. She's not opening her eyes. And, you know, have a look. You know, we want you to take a look and see what's wrong. You know, and they were really insisting that the doctors and nurses, you know, the doctors and nurses were like, no, it's normal, it's fine. But my granddad insisted, saying, no, she's not opening her eyes. She hasn't opened it since. And, you know, there's definitely something wrong. And then eventually they had to pry the eyelids open. And then they saw that, okay, she's got cataracts. And then that's when the doctors decided, okay, we need to operate and get, you know, get the cataracts out and, you know, kind of remove the lens. And about, I think, a month or so later, I think that's when I had the operation for the eyes. I had two operations to have the lenses removed at probably four or five months of age, I think. Yeah, I think something like
that. Yeah, yeah, very young.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened after that? Did you go to a mainstream school, Sal, or did you go through specialist education? What was that like through school?
So at first I went to the first school that I went to was a school for the blind, visually impaired. And what happened was, though, that school I was only there for about 2 years. Because what happened was in the 80s, In the early 80s, they decided was that they were going to get rid of some of the specialist schools that they had around our you know, my hometown, and they were sort of getting rid of them and integrating children with impairments, especially, to mainstream schools, but with an impairment unit. So so for the first 2 years, I was, as I say, at this school for visually impaired and blind children, and for me, it really worked really well, because it was a class of five children. You know, we were a class of five, you know, with two adults. It was a small classroom. And, you know, I felt comfortable and quite safe. And, you know, I was quite happy there. And then, as I say, at the age of five, because they decided that the school, they didn't want that the specialist schools anymore, you know, the government decided to get rid of them, we were then split up, and there were now two schools for visually impaired children in what I like to call a semi-mainstream school. So while it was a mainstream school, they had a VI unit in there, so that children from children who had a vision impairment could go to those schools and had that support. And it was on, they were, both those schools were set in on the outskirts of, you know, my hometown, and so that children from other towns, you know, close by, they could come to the school as well, because most of the towns didn't have schools for visually impaired children or a school with a VI unit. And for me, it was a really, really hard transition, because I'm one of these people, I really struggle with change. And but the change for me in this instance was really, really big. And it was like the classroom were not small anymore. You know, we were in a classroom of, it was an open plan school. So we had a huge classroom. The room was quite big. There were about probably 60 to 90 children in that one room alone. And quite a few adults in that room as well. So it was, you know, it was now a noisy environment, too many, you know, lots of children, lots of people, and you know, and it was just so different. I think with transitioning to semi mainstream school, I really struggled. And the thing about going to the semi mainstream school was that because of my sight, because I had enough sight to kind of walk around and, you know, kind of move around without having a cane or, you know, mobility aid, and the fact that I was able to kind of write on paper, you know, use pencil and paper and all this, that, you know, all of that. So for me, what happened was, and they had only limited amount of support workers. So for me, I didn't get that support when I went to that mainstream school. I didn't really get the support. They just left me to my own devices. They just enlarged my work for me, you know, whatever worksheets that needed enlarging, or if I needed to look at something on the board, they encouraged me to actually get up and look, read what's on the board, and then go back and sit down. So I was just basically left to my own devices, and any of the problems that I had were just left. They were quite ignored. So I also had a bit of what I would call learn. I wouldn't say it was a major learning difficulty, but I did have, I was one of these children who, one of these people who, it takes me a bit of time to kind of get understand, or, you know, kind of to learn something, like, well, academically, I mean, like, I used to struggle quite a bit with academia, and I mean, but they ignored it, because I was able to learn the letters of the alphabet, the numbers. I could count to 100. I could say the alphabet, and I could read, and, you know, and kind of count. So anything else was just kind of ignored, and none of that was kind of recognized. They only wanted to concentrate on the visual impairment. And the thing with the visual impairment, as I say, because I had enough vision, they just felt that, okay, we're not going to give her that support, because we're going to concentrate on the ones who are completely blind or severely sight impaired, who will need Braille and, you know, won't be able to see anything at all. So I was quite, you know, I didn't really get that support in primary school at all. And the only other thing that I did get support was social. Because it was very obvious that I had social skills, you know, social difficulties. It was very painfully obvious. So that was, they only concentrated on the social aspects of my learning or my education, if you like, and whatever small amounts of visual impairment, you know, that's where they kind of sort of concentrated on. Secondary school was a little bit more better. Again, it was semi-mainstream secondary school. I did have support in the classroom, like, as in, I had a support worker in the classroom with me, but that was only because there were two other visually impaired students who were visually impaired, who had more, you know, quite severely, their vision was impaired quite severely. I think they were both blind, so, you know, because they were having the support, and what they decided to do was they kept me with those two, one mainly because one of them I'd been at primary school with, and I needed somebody familiar, I needed a familiar face, and they kept me with him, and the other one, you know, just basically because she was blind as well, and, you know, and they decided to keep all three of us visually impaired in that year group. They decided to keep us together. I think they did it with every year group, that they kept all the visually impaired children together in one class, in one form group, if you like, with one, you know, that kind of thing. And so just so that they could give the support to, you know, whichever, you know, that those children, as, you know, have that, so they only could have like one support worker in that year group. If that sort of makes sense. I don't know if that really makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. So secondary school sounds like it was a little bit easier because you had at least some, you had support there, but partly because you were with other visually impaired children.
Yeah. So partly because I was with other visually impaired children, I had that support then, you know, I had somebody to dictate whatever was on the board for me. I had the working large. And in some cases I did have the, because as I say, the academics, I've struggled with the academics. So in some cases I did have the academic, the support for the academic as well, you know, which was kind of an advantage. But again, it wasn't something that they wanted to kind of concentrate on. There were one or two who were, you know, VI teachers who were really great, who who thought, you know, okay, so, you know, okay, she's got the visual problem, but she needs the academic learning as well, and we're going to concentrate on all of it, we're going to give her all of that. You know, but there were moments where the academic wasn't, you know, it was just like, oh, when it came to GCSEs, it kind of got a lot harder, because they decided to kind of take away that support and make, you know, I ended up with literally almost no support at all during GCSE. And I think that's when I really, really needed it. But because we were split up, and again, it was really hard, because what they were trying to do is, I ended up in levels that were not exactly right for me. I ended up being put again with the other two, like whichever one of the other two, whoever was in the lower group of the two, that's who I was with. So you know, and so for example, I should have been in set three for maths. I was put in set two because of one of the two VI students that I was with in my year group, that is, because they were in set two. One was in set one and the other one was in set two. So the one in set two, because their set was the lower one, that's where they put me. So I didn't get put into, for maths, I didn't get put into the set group that I should have really been in. So I didn't, and at that point as well, I didn't really get that support. The support was just taken away, and, you know, I didn't. So I kind of struggled in that sense. So I mean, I had a bit of support, and but then at the same time I didn't. College was absolutely awful. I would not recommend having support from outside. I would if I was to go back to college, I would want somebody in the classroom with me, because I tried having support from outside and it didn't work for me at all. I wasn't getting regular support. I was only getting support on, I used to get support on a Wednesday. At first it was somebody different each Wednesday, but then they managed to get somebody regular, somebody who would come in, the same person regularly. But Thursdays were really, you know, because they realized that, well, you know, I didn't really cope with change. And then on Thursdays, but that was a big problem, because what happened was I was getting a different support worker each week, and what I'd do is I would stand outside the classroom and I would literally see who is my support worker today, and if it was somebody new, I would stand there for 5-10 minutes during ICT, you know, trying to debating with myself whether to go in or not, because I was just petrified of that change. Because What I find is, I struggled with this in secondary school as well, but I just coped with it somehow. I mean, I find it really hard, was the fact that each support worker that you get, they have a different way of working, and they have different expectations. And for me, that is really, really, I found that really, really hard, because I found it really hard to kind of deal with the different expectations. And, you know, because I struggled with that, you know, and I got a lot of things wrong, and I got into trouble a lot because, you know, expectations are too high or expectations are different, and I got used to working in one way, and then I had to work in another way. So in college, I would literally stand outside and I would just look through the window just to see, and if it was somebody who I, you know, knew as familiar, who was a familiar face to me, I'd quite happily go in, you know, straight away. But if it was somebody new, I'd stand there 5-10 minutes, you know, deciding whether to go in or not. Eventually I would, because it was ICT and I love ICT. I kind of loved that because it was something that I felt I was good at. So and with, again, with college, I never had all the things in large, so, you know, nothing came on time, everything came late, absolutely late. And, you know, as I say, I had to wait for support workers to come in and help me with the work, you know, outside of the lessons. Tuesdays, they gave me ESOL support, but I didn't use it as an ESOL. They just gave that so that I had the extra visual, you know, somebody to help me with the visual parts of it, because I wasn't getting, you know, from the RNIB, I wasn't getting, you know, enough. I needed a bit more. So they said, we'll lend you an ESOL worker so that she can help you as well, you know. And tutors were having to give me, you know, the overhead projectors. Yeah. They were having to give the, once they finished kind of showing the other students, you know, what was on the overhead projector, then they would, you know, they would, once the other students had finished copying that, they would give it then to me to copy from, and then I'd have to return that and then take the next one. It was sort of like, really, I found college really, really hard. I just really found it really hard. I ended up not going into education after college, but education was quite difficult in some ways, and in other ways it was kind of okay.
Yeah, it sounds challenging. So yeah. what was it like for you? So home life, were you quite independent at home? Have you got brothers and sisters who are, I'm guessing you're the only one of your siblings that's got a visual impairment?
Yeah, I am the only child. I've all of my siblings that has a visual impairment, and it was kind of with me, it was kind of glaringly obvious that, you know, that I did struggle with a bit of independence and things, because all of my siblings, they were kind of developing a lot more faster than I was, so, you know, they were doing things a lot more quicker than I was, so I was kind of learning a little bit more slower, and, you know, like putting on trying to, you know, learning to put on clothes the right way around, it took a long time to do that, you know, doing shoelaces because not having the coordination to do that, you know, that kind of thing. It was, so, you know, the development, you know, my development and things like that, with physical development things, that was quite a struggle. Also, you know, my parents were quite protective of me as well, so I didn't really learn to, you know, kind of handle money until quite later as well, so going to the shops and things like that, I didn't really get to go out on my own until quite later. And, you know, I think the first time I ever went out, I think when I first started going out on my own, I think I might have been probably 12 maybe, but that was only to my grandma's and back, because they kind of, my grandparents, they lived quite close by, and it wasn't, you know, there weren't too many busy roads and things like that, and I actually struggled with learning to cross, you know, busy roads and things like that, so I found, you know, traveling quite I found that quite challenging, and I didn't really learn to travel on a bus until my 20s actually. So I didn't really, you know, get on a bus until my 20s. I didn't learn to do shopping until quite late. I think maybe I was doing simple shopping maybe at the age of probably, I don't know, 16 like that. I don't blame them or anything like that. It's just that because they didn't, I was the only child, you know, with vision impairment, and they didn't really know how to, you know, they didn't have the support, and they didn't really know how to actually deal with that kind of thing. And, you know, and they were quite protective, and they didn't want me to get hurt, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's not they weren't being mean, or, you know, they weren't trying to stop me or anything like that. It wasn't that. It was just that, you know, because visual impairment wasn't my only disability, so, you know, there were other things, so they were just trying to make sure that, you know, I was safe, and, you know, and that it was, you know, that, because, you know, it must be, if I think about it, looking at it from their point of view, I mean, I know as a teenager I did have a bit of a strop, and I thought, oh, you know, why this and why that, but now as an adult, when I look at it from their point of view, you know, as a parent, you don't always know. There's no handbook to say, you know, how to deal with that kind of thing, or, you know, and things like that. I mean, every parent is different. Some parents are quite happy to kind of allow their children to do whatever they want. But I suppose, you know, looking at it from my parents' point of view, you know, they saw that sometimes I was a bit clumsy, I'd knock into things, or I'd get hurt here and there, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And to see that, you know, that kind of probably made them feel a bit, oh, you know, she gets hurt quite easily, she's knocking into things, and, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, when the children play, you know, it's like you know, sometimes I'd get hurt because they kind of knocked me over or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And it was like so, you know, seeing that, it must have made them feel that, you know, we've got to make sure that she doesn't get hurt, you know, that kind of thing, if that's what makes sense. But yeah, I mean, again, with children, playing with children, I used to love playing outside with the children. I did play with the, you know, at home, I did play with the other children and stuff outside, but at first they were really afraid of playing with me, because they thought, you know, what if she gets hurt, we're going to get into trouble, you know, because the adults will, you know, they would have told them off. They would have told them off because anytime I used to get hurt, they used to get into trouble. So it was, but at first I was like, oh, you know, if anything happens to her, we're going to get into trouble. But I used to be quite, I used to love running around and just, you know, I just love running and I wanted to play and I wanted to join. And I mean, there were times when I knew that there was a limit that I was, you know, that I thought, okay, because I wouldn't play rugby. I knew that that wasn't something I wanted to play because I didn't like the idea of being tumbled on top of, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
So, you know, I knew that's okay. That's not, I'm not going to play that. And they were quite happy to say, no, you're not playing. You know, they were like, no, you're not playing. I was quite happy to, you know, for them to say that because I knew that rugby wasn't going to be that, you know, but I wanted to play football. I wanted to run around and things like that. I played tag. So, you know, eventually they saw that, okay, she wants to play and she's playing. She seems to be fine. But then you know there were moments when I did get hurt, but it was just like, you know, they did kind of panic, but at the same time, you know, they knew that I wasn't like major hurt, you know, I wasn't gonna get hurt really major, you know, it wasn't such a major thing. Yeah. I'd get back up and I'd, you know, go again. I know there was one point we were playing football and I really hurt, you know, I got really badly hurt. I fell. I think I twisted my ankle and I fell as well. And I got knocked over at that point because I bumped into someone. Because I don't have the stamina to, you know, when I'm running, I can't distinct, because I don't have depth perception. So I can't stop at the right moment and things like that. And I must have banged into someone. And I twisted my ankle at the same time and I fell and it was, I was really, really hurt at that point. And they were like, oh no, you know, they were all like, oh no, 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 no. What, you know, what we're going to do? We have to, you know, we have to make sure that she's okay. And, you know, I was just like, you know, they were like, shh, don't say anything, you know, kind of thing. Panicking. I was panicking. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, if I start crying now, they're not going to let me play ever again. And I remember, and I said, look, let me sit. I was crying a bit, and then I was like, let me sit out. I want to sit out, and then I'm going to come back in again. And they were like, are you sure? Like, yeah. So then I sat out, and then when I was ready to play again, I did get back up and play again. But they were like, they were a bit, you know, they're like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So it was like my childhood was a bit, yeah, it was good, but at the same time, you know, people were a bit protective and but understandably, I think, in my opinion anyway, it was understandably, I think they were protective. It wasn't, you know, malicious or anything like that. It was more protection. It was more, you know, that kind of thing.
So moving forward to when you left college, what was the next sort of step for you? What did you start looking for work, or did you, what was your thing after college?
So after college for me, it was, I took a year out. I had a year where I just didn't do anything. But then towards the end of that year, I just start kind of looking for work, and I ended up on Job Seekers because I couldn't find work. So I wanted help. But during that time when I had no work at all, my health was declining, you know, mentally, and you know, I was just, you know, towards the end, I was just starting to really you know, I was just suffering really badly because I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. I mean, I was eating, but I couldn't eat. I didn't enjoy food as much as, or, you know, I just didn't want to eat. And then I wasn't sleeping. I was sleeping for maybe 1 hour a day. But it got to that point, it started decreasing. It went from, you know, it went from 6 hours to 4 hours to 2 hours and 1 hour. And it was just really awful. And chest pains and things like that. So I was thinking, I think, although it wasn't diagnosed at the time, I think that was depression. I think I went into depression at that point because my emotional state was really awful because I stopped feeling anything. Just, I was just really low and I didn't feel anything like happy. Nothing would make me happy. Even listening to my favorite music, nothing. So it got really bad. And then I went to get Job Seekers and I was kind of referred to a disabilities employment advisor, and I did have support from the disability unit, you know, that kind of department.
Yeah.
And I had someone, you know, helped me kind of look as well, you know, kind of thing. So I met with the disabilities employment advisor, and I met with this person who was helping me to kind of get work as well. And the disabilities employment advisor she had, I wasn't very happy with the way she dealt with things, because she told me that, because she was asking what kind of things I wanted to do. And when I told her things that I wanted to do, she kept, you know, she kept saying, oh, that's not a real job. You know, when you, if you get rich and famous, you know, remember me. But, you know, she was laughing, you know, taking them, you know, because I wanted to be an author, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. But then, as well, I wanted to work. I said to her, I want to work with children. And she kind of went, no, you're not going to be working with children. You need to think about something else, because no employer in their right mind will employ you as a visually impaired person to work with children. And
gosh,
I really wasn't happy. I to hear her say that, it was like, because that was my dream. My dream was to work with children. I wanted to really work with children. I that was the one thing I really wanted to do. It's something that it was my passion, you know, and it was something that a lot of people had said that I would probably be quite good at doing. And because I love being around, you know, children, and, you know, my cousin, I had lots of cousins growing up, and, you know, they were all young and, you know, like quite small little children and babies. And, you know, a lot of people had seen me, you know, kind of with them, and said, you know, you should really go into, you know, doing something at least with children. So that was, you know, that, and I realized that actually that's something I would enjoy, and I really like being around children. So that was the one thing I wanted to do. And to hear her say that really kind of depressed me again, because I thought, you know, my dreams had been shattered, and I thought, well, that's it. What else do I want to do? I don't really want to do anything else, you know, and I felt so miserable about it. But then with college, they sort of had because I didn't complete the course properly, I needed to do 20 more days of placement. They sort of called me in and said, you know, you can do 20 days of placement, and we're going to let you choose where you want to do your placement, because, you know, we can't organize the transport for you. So, you know, you choose. So that's what I did. And then I found somewhere, and then I kind of did 20 days of placement. I did a 20 days placement at one place. So I stopped with the job seekers at that point. I said, you know, I can't do it, because I need to do I need to do full time for that 20 days. And then afterwards, if after the 20 days, you know, I'm back in the position where I'm not working again, then I will come back and I will, you know, reapply for the job seekers.
Yeah.
What I did was that I did this 20 days of placement, and then somebody told me, I think it was my auntie, she said, Sal, there's a job going at that place where you're at, you know, where you're doing voluntary at. I was like, really? And she was like, yeah, go and apply for it. But I was in two minds at that point, and I thought to myself, yeah, but I was told that they won't hire me. Nobody's going to hire me. So, you know, is there really any point in trying, or, you know, going for something like that? But then another part of me said, wait, hang on a minute, look, you're doing it voluntarily. If they can accept you doing it for free, then you can do that job, you know, they can pay you and you can do that job paid.
Yeah.
And a part of my mind was like saying, just do it, apply for it, if you get it, you get it, if you don't, you don't, you know, that kind of thing. So I kind of thought to myself, yeah, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna go for it, I'm gonna see, I'm just gonna check, you know, I'm gonna apply for it and just go with whatever happens, you know, that kind of thing. So I kind of applied on the last of my last day there. And the managers were like saying, oh yeah, you know, we're quite happy for you to apply. So, you know, and they gave me the forms and had me fill it out. And then I went in and did the interview, and yeah. And then they were saying that there's some of the staff that I'd been working with, some of them don't normally compliment people, but they were saying that, but they were really impressed with what they were seeing that I was doing. They were really impressed. And, you know, and that for me, that was a really surprise. Like, you know, they were saying this all in the interview. They were like, oh, you know, we've had compliments about you, you know, from what you've been doing, and, you know, you've been doing a really good job, and, you know, and we've not had anybody, you know, work like that. You know, you've been using your initiatives and things, and that's something that, you know, during college, that was one of the things I needed to work on. But these lot here at this place, they're like, oh no, you know, you seem to be using your initiatives, you seem to be doing quite well. You know, and the children, you know, really enjoy having you in, 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 you know, in class and things, and you know, and they were quite impressed and really happy with what I'd done, and you know, I was really surprised about that. And then you know, after the interview, it was like then I was they rang me and they said, oh, you've got the job. I was like,
wow. So
I was so surprised, but I was so relieved, but I was so surprised at the same time, because I wasn't expecting that at all. I didn't expect for them to kind of, you know, say that, I wasn't expecting them to kind of, you know, accept it and, you know, give me the job.
Yeah.
But when I then went in, they said, oh, we didn't even have to really think about it. You know, we've seen what you do. And we like what you do. We like what we've seen. And and you were saying, and you know, the head teacher was like saying, well, you know, some of the staff that would not normally compliment people, now they've been really impressed with what you've done. And these people don't compliment people normally. They normally have something, you know, they're normally the opposite. You know, they always have something else, you know, something to say about somebody. But you got complimented. And I was like, really surprised. I was so shocked. I was like, are you sure you're talking about me? I was like, yes, we are. You know,
good.
I have low self-esteem and confidence. So, you know, because I've always felt that I've not been really very good, you know, at anything. So I was really surprised. And you know, they were really impressed. And when they made me redundant in 2009, I cried, because that was the best 7 years of my life. There were downsides as well, but the positives of being in that place, those 7 years were so good. You know, I took away all the positives, and you know, they really made me feel like, you know, I feel at home, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd never had, you know, even things socially, things really improved, because I'd never been so popular, because at that workplace, everybody, you know, I could go from one group to another each day. You know, if it's say one day I wanted to be with one group, I could go and sit with them, and another day I wanted to be in with another group, I could sit with them. And I was on friendly terms with almost everyone at that place. And you know, for the first time, I literally felt like I was at home, and you know, people were, you know, were talking to me and trying to include me, you know. And you know, and it was just so nice. And you know, just to have that, and you know, for people to kind of really include me as well. And I just, you know, I really enjoyed it. And when I had to leave, I literally cried for about 3 months. For 3 months, I just really was really upset about it, about leaving that place. And then I did apply for another job, which is my current one, and I got that one within a month of not, you know, being unemployed, which again was a surprise, because they said to me after the interview, they were like, we've never had anybody interview like that. We were so impressed with you, with your answers, and with the way you, you know, with the way you did, you, the way you conducted yourself. And you know, I was like, are you sure you're talking about me again? You know, cause
yeah,
you know. And it was, yes, we are talking about you. You know, I find it really hard to believe when people say, you know, things like that, because I'm just, I don't know, I'm not one of these people that are normally very good at, you know, very good at things. I normally don't come top, because during my whole academic school life, I never came top of anything. I was always near the bottom. So when it comes to things like that, I really get surprised when people have things like that to say. So it's really, you know, it has been a bit of a journey, and it's, you know, it's really nice. I love what I do. I literally love my job. I love it. And and if today my current job was to go, I would not know what else I would do. Like, people have asked me, what would you do if you couldn't do what you currently do? What would you do? I always say that I really don't know, because there's nothing else that I like the sound of, or I just wouldn't want to do anything else. I just really, really love I really love what I do. I really enjoy it. I really do.
So for anyone who doesn't know you as well as I do, so do you want to just give people a little flavour of what your job entails, Sal, so that, you know, because for someone with a visual impairment, if someone else is thinking about working with children or something, do you want to just give a little outline of what your job entails?
So basically, so my job entails things like working with special needs children, and I sort of work with those children and try and kind of support them support them through their learning and adapt lessons to their needs, and work with small groups of, you know, work with them in small groups of children so that they can, you know, they can have access to the to what everybody else is, you know, the learning that everybody else is having, so that they can have access to that in a way that kind of suits their needs, and so that they're doing the same thing, but, you know, in to their at their level, basically. And also, you know, I do also listen to children read and, you know, do that kind of thing. So basically, I mainly work with SEN children, with children who have learning difficulties and things like that. And it's something that I feel that it's not something that has hindered, you know, I don't feel that my vision impairment has hindered me. I mean, I do have certain readjustments and things, but not greatly, not major, but I think it is doable. I think it is something that can be done. I think it is kind of something that I don't think a visual impairment should kind of stop anyone from doing something like that. But yeah, so basically I'm a teaching assistant, a special education needs teaching assistant. So I think in a classroom setting, I think it is possible. I think in a nursery it might be a bit more trickier, but I think it could be done, but it might just be a little bit more in a play group or that kind of nursery kind of setting, it might be a little bit more trickier. It probably can be done. I mean, when I did do, because I've done voluntary in a nursery setting as well, and I found that it could be done. I seem to manage okay, and I didn't really need much readjustments there. I seem to do okay over there, but I'm thinking more for those with a bit more with more severe, you know, visual impairment. It could be a bit tricky, but I think it could be possible. It just might just be a bit more tricky. And I think in the classroom, though, I think that could be that's something that can be doable. I mean, the way I do it, I mean, I can't read things on the board. So, but I have an iPad or a laptop with that, with the same thing, that's whatever's on the board. I have it there in front of me as well. So then I've got that.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So, and I've got I've got what I call a CCTV, what they call at the school, they call it a visualizer. But basically what that is like a camera kind of thing, and, you know, and you put a text or a printed a book or a sheet or whatever underneath it with small print, and it kind of under the lens of that camera, and then it enlarges it it upon a TV screen. I don't know how else to kind of explain it, but that. So I have one of those. I have a CCTV, so that if I do reading, I can sort of when I do listen to readers and things like that, I've got that as well, you know. But mainly with me, but it works better for me being with the younger children, because when you're with the younger children, they read large print anyway, so that's fine. I barely, when I'm working with younger children, I barely need that CCTV. You know, and so yeah, I think it's doable. You know, you can have those kind of little small, you know, adaptations there.
Great. And what's life like for you now? I know you're still doing the same job, but what are your hobbies and interests? I think you're still doing some writing, aren't you?
Yeah, I really enjoy doing writing. I like to write. I like to do creative writing. While I'm not a very academic person, I was very creative growing up, and even now to this day, I quite love my creative, doing things creatively. So I love creative writing and writing fiction. I also love doing writing blogs, you know, and expressing myself through writing. I find that the written language is a lot more easier than the spoken. I find that to express myself, I find it easy to kind of write, like kind of express myself through writing rather than kind of the verbal. Like I find it a bit more harder expressing myself verbally,
yeah,
than I would writing it. So I kind of like blogging and kind of expressing myself in those, in that kind of sense, and expressing myself through fictional writing, you know, that kind of thing. I also love to I love to draw as well, and I love colouring, and I love drawing, and I've now recently gotten into digital art. So I've been doing digital arts for about a year now, and I'm really, really loving it, absolutely loving it. And I was introduced to it in while I was at the Apple store, actually, and they kind of said, you know, oh, you know, we don't normally let people come onto our, you know, courses without without booking an appointment, but we've got an art session going on. Would you like to kind of join it? And I sort of said, yeah, you know, I was like, yeah, I want to do it. And so I kind of went in and I kind of did it. And it, like, they kind of let me have a play with an iPad and do a bit of drawing on an iPad. And I thought, this is great. This is amazing. And, you know, and I hadn't drawn anything for such a long time. Like, it had been years since I'd actually, you know, drawn with a pencil or anything. Yeah. So, and then, and I did it, and I realized how much I'd missed drawing, you know, and kind of coloring and, you know, and that kind of thing. And I really got into it, and I thought, I want to do this. So I started to, I downloaded the app that they kind of let me use and stuff, and I started to do a bit of drawing, and you know, and I really, you know, got into it, and I found a few coloring apps as well. So I do a bit of digital coloring as well as physically coloring now, and I quite enjoy doing that as well. What else do I enjoy doing? I like to
You like reading, don't you? You're a bookworm.
Oh yes, I do. this is what I mean when I like, I can't think of, like, I always struggle to think, like, when people ask me, what do you like to do? And I sometimes, you know, when I went to the hospital once, they asked me that, and I was like, I don't know. I forget, like, and I'm like, I don't know. But yes, I do love reading. I am an avid reader. I've loved reading since childhood. Anything to do with stories, I just love it. And I love reading stories. I'm really into like mysteries, anything with a mystery element in it. I love that. And I am starting to branch out a bit and starting to read other things. Like, I'd never ever thought of reading memoirs before, but I've started this year. I've started reading a few memoirs, and I really like reading some classical stuff. It depends how easy it is. And you know, I really do enjoy reading. It's kind of like my way of escaping reality sometimes, because I sometimes really need to kind of escape reality, and it's just one of those things that, you know, you can escape to and, you know, just really enjoy. And just, I just like to, as well, books have been my you know, they've been my lifeline, really, because, again, growing up as a child, from reading books and things, that's where I learned a lot of social skills and a lot of, you know, and one of the things that I really love about books is that you get to see the dialogue and what goes on in people's heads, you know, what their thinking is like, and psychology. And I've learned a lot, actually, from reading, and I think reading has really, you know, helped a lot, as well as the enjoyment part of it. I do enjoy it, and I'm one of these people, I love psychology. I love the idea of knowing what makes people tick. And books kind of do that, you know, you get to kind of look into someone's head, and it's just brilliant. I just love it. I love reading. So yeah, that's one thing that I really do love doing. I've always loved it. I hope I never ever stop loving reading. You know, because it's just one of those things that I've always, I'm a bit of a bookworm, total book nerd. total book nerd. I'm trying to think what else.
So you're really creative, aren't you? It's the creative arts that get you, isn't it?
Yeah, creative side. I like to play a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm good at making music, but I do dabble in. I mean, I'm not great. I have a keyboard app on my phone, which I like to kind of play little tiny bits of songs. I never know how to play the whole song. I just learn. I play by ear, and I will teach myself to do, you know, little tiny bits of certain songs. I find that because I like a bit of Bollywood as well as a bit of English, and I find that Bollywood is a little bit more easier to play than the English songs. But I have taught myself to play one or two English songs and one or two Bollywood. So, you know, I do like to dabble in it and just have a bit of a mess around. I wouldn't say I'm a professional or anything like that, but I do play by ear. I don't really know how to read sheet music and yeah. So when I did do it at school, though, I found I struggled with the academic side of music. But you know, now that I'm not doing it academically, now that I just do it as a sort of mess around kind of thing, I find that I like to kind of challenge myself in kind of doing it by ear and kind of seeing how much I can actually teach myself, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
no, I dabble in it. I wouldn't say I'm great at it, but yeah, I like to,
but you enjoy it.
I enjoy it.
So I suppose before we finish, we should really ask you the question, I suppose, that, you know, people will be thinking about. How has lockdown been for you, Sal? How have you coped? Have you continued to go to work and everything? Have you been able to do that?
So during lockdown, I think I've been kind of okay because I've been kind of okay. I mean, I do miss being around you know, other people and stuff like that, but I'm not necessarily a social butterfly, I wouldn't say. So with that aspect, I don't think it's too bad. I kind of keep myself occupied with all the creative stuff that I do as well. And working wise, there are moments when I do go in, and then there are times when I'm actually doing work remotely. So remote working is really, it's really different. It's really strange. I find it really strange. I don't like the fact that I'm having to record myself on video and, you know, having my face being on the plastic, you know, quite large on a computer screen. But it's okay. It's okay. I'm getting used to it. I'm kind of into it and stuff. I still kind of miss physically actually being at work and, you know, physically doing the job. Because like I said, I really love my job and I love to do it. I like the physical aspects of it. But you know, for my health, you know, I need to kind of where needed, you know, during the lockdown, whenever we have the lockdown, you know, the whole national kind of lockdown, I've been doing remotely, kind of doing it at home and things. So but like I say, mental health wise, I think with me, I find that every time the rules change or something like that, or when the government starts, you know, talking and they talk about all these, you know, changes and things or new rules added, or, you know, that's when I start to really feel panicky then, because it's all, you know, like, oh, what if I make a mistake? I mean, when they first introduced 2 meter rules, and, you know, with the shopping, especially, you know, with going to the shops and things like that. When they were talking about, you know, there were going to be markings on the floor, you know, places where you could stand, you know, when they were talking about rules where there were places where you could stand, where you couldn't stand, where, you know, things that you could do, things that you couldn't do, you know, that kind of thing. And it was like really worrying, because I was thinking, well, you know, what if I don't know where the line is, or what if I don't know where those markings are, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I was worried about getting, you know, making mistakes while out and about. That's what worried me, you know, throughout this whole pandemic, is making mistakes and doing, you know, not knowing what I'm doing, and then, you know, having people you know, kind of get a bit abusive, you know, because they can. And so I was worried about, you know, what if I make a mistake that people are not going to be happy about, and then there's the fact that I struggle with, you know, keeping my distance, like as in depth perception. So, you know, social distance isn't really easy, you know, and, you know, so what if I walk too close to somebody and without realizing it, or, you know, that kind of thing, or, you know, and so it was more or less, I think it was more the going out and, you know, having to go out and deal with all these new rules and all these different changes and, you know, all that kind of thing. I think for me, that's where kind of made me feel more anxious and things like that. And social wise, I'm not totally missing the social aspects of, you know, like people saying, you know, they're missing going out with friends. And so, I mean, I do miss meeting up with friends, but I wasn't meeting up with friends like daily or anything like that anyway before. You know, I'm quite happy, you know, like just socializing through things like social media and things like that, you know, that kind of thing. You know, and so, you know, that's, I mostly get my social from social media and stuff like that. And rather than, you know, I find that easier than, you know, kind of meeting people face to face and things like that. I don't do very well with big groups, So it's not like I'm missing out on the social aspects or anything like that. And you know, with other things, you know, like boredom and things like that, I'm really trying to use the creative, you know, like being creative and stuff. So the digital art, reading, writing, I'm trying to do all of that. I mean, with certain things like the writing, I did have a writer's block, because I think a lot of people had said that, you know, they struggled with that, you know, struggled with coming up with ideas and stuff, you know, because of the pandemic and, you know, with all the worries and stuff. So there was that, but I do try and keep myself occupied, and, you know, like, and as I say, friends have been, they've been sending me challenges and saying, oh, you look here, there's this group that are doing a challenge, you know, because I did the January challenge, which was really great, and that was inclusive, and that was for people both mainstream and people with disabilities and stuff as well, so it was really great. And a friend, she kind of introduced me to that, and I was like, oh yeah, I'd really love to do that. So, you know, getting into those kind of things, I think that's really helped, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with, like I say, with work, it's just strange. It's not, you know, it's not too bad. I do miss the physical aspects, you know, but yeah. It's not too bad. I'm kind of okay and used to it now. It's just a bit strange, that's all. But it's okay. It's still okay. Mm-hmm. I'm liking it to an extent, but you know, it is what it is, you know. But yeah, no.
That's brilliant. Yeah,
socially, yeah, it's all fine so far.
That's good news.
As long as it's not like for too long, like, you know, hopefully we'll be back soon and stuff like that. I just want everything to be back to normal. That's all I want. I want it to be back to normal.
And millions of others. Oh, thank you so much, Sal. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for sharing your story and what it was like growing up and about your eye condition and everything. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been an interesting experience. Like, I've never done anything like this before. So, it was interesting. I've enjoyed myself.
Thank you.